What do you remember from yesterday's class?
For advancing in spiritual life.
Okay, and which and mode of
material?
Yes.
The mode of goodness.
Yes, Haribol.
But only bhakti, devotion.
Very goodness. Yes, they cannot understand Krishna. Krishna is ununderstandable to those infected by the modes of material nature. Now, that chapter, the 25th chapter, spoke about the three modes of material nature and how they completely cover and bind a soul. Where is this from? That's from Krishna Balaram. So the soul is completely covered by the modes of material nature and born of the modes of material nature, powered by the soul's energy, by the consciousness of the soul, different qualities and activities and consciousnesses manifest from the conditioned soul, and the conditioned soul perceives himself, he thinks of himself as those qualities, even though they are born not from him, the soul, but they are born from the three modes of material nature. So the conclusion of this 25th chapter is, in 33, it describes, well, really in 22, we'll just start in actually, 31, because this summarizes that the condition of a conditioned soul is being fully subservient to the modes of material nature. So 31 says, O best of human beings, all states of material being are related to the interaction of the enjoying soul and material nature. And even though they are completely separate, the soul and material nature are completely separate, still the soul feels himself as one and part of material nature. Whether seen, heard of, or only conceived within the mind, they are without exceptions constituted or made of material, the modes of nature. So everything perceived by the soul, even though he thinks he's perceiving reality, he's just perceiving different combinations of the three modes of material nature. So his perceptions are, first of all, illusory, because they're not his perceptions, they are what is presented to him by the modes of material nature. And second of all, they limit him, because he's seeing based on the modes that affect him. He's not seeing reality. He's not seeing the world as it is. So then onward, O gentle Uddhav, all these phases, different phases of conditioned life, arise from work born of the modes of material nature. The living entity who conquers these modes, he goes beyond these modes, manifested from the mind, which come from the mind, can dedicate himself to me, Krishna says, by the process of devotional service, and thus attain pure love for me. Therefore, having achieved this human form of life, which allows one to develop full knowledge, those who are intelligent should free themselves from all contaminations of the modes of nature and engage exclusively in loving service to me. So everyone should free himself. What was it? Wow. Huh? He was this big. I saw him. He was huge. Huge teeth. It might even have been bigger than that. I'm not sure. We're lucky to still be alive. You almost did some book distribution this morning. I thought because I was just reading, minding my own business and reading, and suddenly everyone went, I thought was going ecstatic and screaming. So The wise, oh yes, therefore, having achieved this human form of life, which allows one to develop full knowledge, those who are intelligent should free themselves from all contamination of the modes of nature and engage exclusively in loving service to me. Become free from all the contaminations of Maya in the form of goodness, passion, ignorance. A wise sage, being free from all material association and unbewildered, should subdue his senses and worship me. In other words, I don't want to act anymore, for I'm a wise person, a sage. I don't want to act anymore controlled and limited and by the modes of material nature. Rather, I just should serve Krishna. Now, an example of this we heard just in a few chapters ago with the Avanti Brahmana, who actually did this. He engaged himself only with things. Oh, here it says he should conquer the modes. So he's telling now, Krishna's telling how to conquer the modes. Conquer the modes of passion and ignorance by engaging himself only with the things in the mode of goodness, a more gradual path. And then being fixed in devotional service, the sage should also conquer the material mode of goodness by indifference towards the modes. That was the Brahmana. Thus pacified within his mind, the mind being satisfied on a higher level, not trying to squeeze or manipulate pleasure from the modes, the spirit soul, free from the modes of nature, gives up the very cause of his conditioned life and attains me. Free, listen, this verse is very interesting, the last one we read yesterday. Freed from the subtle conditioning of the mind and from the modes of nature born of material consciousness. What did I just say? Yes, free from the subtle conditioning of the mind, because the mind is infected by the modes, and free from that, and free from identifying with the infection of the modes, and freed from the modes of nature born of material consciousness, the living entity becomes completely satisfied by experiencing my transcendental form. So then one can actually, when one is free from all Maya, one can perceive Krishna, and he no longer searches for enjoyment in the external energy, nor does he contemplate or remember such enjoyment within himself. It's just he's been reformatted, so to speak, his consciousness, using the example of a computer hard drive. So it's all gone. It's all gone. But the monkey is still there.
He's watching.
Huh?
He's watching.
He's what?
Watching.
Watching. Yes. Okay, just sit down. Betye. Don't worry. Now, why has Krishna at this particular moment sent a monkey? Now, ask this question. What's the answer? If you will... Huh? Yes. Now watch what's going to... Now this is where we're going to with the monkey mind. Now we should all become very determined to be free from the modes of material nature and only engage in full meditation, thinking, focusing on Krishna's pleasure and devotional service. But there's one problem. And this mind has such a tendency to pull us from that determination. It is like the worst kind of monkey. And monkeys are famous for their activities, and those kind of activities are what we're going to hear about right now, the big trap. The dealings between Matajis and Pitajis in a sexual relationship. This breaks the determination of a soul, because the soul who's free from the modes of material nature, he just thinks that I am Krishna's servant. I'm just a servant. I am not Bhunkte Prakriti Janiha. I am not an enjoyer in the material world. He's convinced he's a servant. And then The female monkey walks by and the monkey mind jumps. And then suddenly the enjoying spirit, the Purusha above, the enjoying spirit comes out. So Krishna is going to tell us what this problem is that can break one's determination in the next chapter. But before we read chapter 26, we'll go back to the ninth canto where the beginning of this pastime takes place. And that's in chapter 14. Because this Aila Gita, Aila is the name of Purarava. And Purarava, as we shall hear, is a descendant of the moon god, and he's very beautiful. And I'll read first the beginning of the, I'll just summarize the chapter 14. This chapter describes Soma and how he kidnapped the wife of Brihaspati, because he was attracted to her. So there's the first monkeyness. But of course, they're most exalted personalities. So they can't be judged by our consciousness. And he begot in her womb, a son named Buddha. Buddha begot Purarava, who was also named Aila, who begot six sons headed by Ayu in the womb of Urvasi. So that's the summary of a very brief summary of the whole chapter. Now here's a longer summary. Lord Brahma was born from the lotus that sprouted from the navel of Gobadakshai Vishnu. Brahma had a son named Atri, and Atri's son was Soma, the king of all drugs and stars. That doesn't have anything to do with Hollywood, by the way, or Bollywood. Meaning medicinal herbs and of all the nakshatras, all the configurations of stars or constellations. Soma became the conqueror of the entire universe. He was so powerful and so beautiful. And being inflated with pride, he kidnapped Tara, who was the wife of Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods. So when one is in the mood of enjoyer and conqueror, Ishwaraham, then one becomes envious of what one thinks will give one's pleasure, and I am the person who is most suitable to enjoy. So he took away the wife of Brihaspati, who was the spiritual master of the demigods. And a great fight ensued between the demigods and the asuras, because Sukracharya, being inimical to Brihaspati, took the side of Soma. But Brahma rescued Brihaspati's wife, whose name was? From the clutches of Soma, and returned her to her husband, thus stopping the fighting. In the womb of Tara, Soma begot a son named Buddha, who was very intelligent, obviously, who later begot in the womb of Ila a son named Aila, or Purarava. Now, I'm going to... There's a particular reason why I'd like to actually take the time to read it and not just read the summary, and then we'll go on over here. We'll go on with this chapter in a moment. Now, Buddha, this is starting in text 16, through the womb of Ila, a son was born named Purarava, who was described in the beginning of the ninth canto. When his beauty, personal qualities, magnanimity, behavior, wealth, and power were described by Narada in the court of Lord Indra, the celestial woman, Urvasi, was attracted to him. And pierced by the arrow of Cupid, she thus approached him. Having been cursed by Mitra and Varuna, the celestial woman, Urvasi, had acquired the habits of a human being. Therefore, upon seeing Purarava, the best of males, whose beauty resembled that of Cupid, she controlled herself and then approached him. So she didn't control her mind, but rather she composed herself so she could get what she wanted. When King Purarava saw Urvasi, His eyes became jubilant in the ecstasy of joy. So when we listen to hear about this Purarava, this Ila, it's exactly what false ego does. Real ego places us in relationship with Krishna, and in relationship with Krishna, one becomes ecstatic. But in relationship with false ego, one doesn't become ecstatic. One thinks of oneself as the enjoyer, but temporarily one feels ecstatic. Not eternally one feels ecstatic, because that's happiness in the mode of which mode of nature?
Passion.
Beginning like nectar, like the end like poison. So when Purarava saw Urvasi, so think of it like there's so many of his characteristics, they're exactly a perverted reflection of ecstatic love for God. His eyes became jubilant in the ecstasy of joy, and the hairs of his body stood on end. With mild, pleasing words, he spoke to her as follows. So she controlled herself, and he controlled himself. He spoke mildly and pleasingly. "Oh, most beautiful woman, you are welcome. Please sit here and tell me what I can do for you." Saying what I can do for you and thinking what you can do for me. This is the reflection at work. "You may enjoy with me as long as you desire. Let us pass our life happily in sexual relationship." Urvasi replied, "O most handsome man, who is the woman whose mind and sight would not be attracted to you?" So she praising him. The dance has begun. "If a woman takes shelter of your chest, she cannot refuse to enjoy with you in a sexual relationship. My dear King Purarava, please give protection to these two lambs." So the conditions are starting to be explained to him for their enjoyment. "You have to protect these two lambs who have fallen down from heaven with me. Although I belong to the heavenly planets and you belong to earth, I shall certainly enjoy sexual union with you. I have no objection to accepting you as my husband, for you are superior in every respect." Urvasi said, here are more conditions. "There are two lambs I came with. My dear hero, only preparations made in ghee will be my eatables, and I shall not want to see you naked at any time except at the time of sexual intercourse." And the great-minded King Purarava accepted these proposals. Purarava replied, "O beautiful one, your beauty is wonderful, and your gestures are also wonderful. Indeed, you are attractive to all human society. Therefore, since you have come of your own accord from the heavenly planets, who on earth would not agree to serve a demigoddess such as you?" Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The best of human beings, Purarava," he began freely enjoying the company of Urvasi, who engaged in sexual activities with him in many celestial places, such as Chaitraratta and Nandakanana, where the demigods enjoy. Urvasi's body was as fragrant as the saffron of a lotus, and being enlivened by the fragrance of her face and body, Purarava enjoyed her company for many days with great jubilation. But not seeing Urvasi in the assembly, the King of Heaven, Lord Indra, said, "Without Urvasi, my assembly is no longer beautiful." Considering this, he requested the Gandharvas to bring her back to his heavenly planet. Thus the Gandharvas came to earth, and at midnight, when everything was dark, they appeared in the house of Purarava and stole the two lambs entrusted to the king by his wife, Urvasi. Urvasi treated the two lambs like her own sons. Therefore, when they were being taken by the Gandharvas and began crying, Urvasi heard them and rebuked her husband. "Now I'm being killed," she said, "under the protection of an unworthy husband who is a coward and a eunuch, although he thinks himself a great hero. Because I am dependent, her mood has changed, if you've noticed, since the beginning. Because I'm dependent, I depended on him. The plunderers have deprived me of my two sons, the lambs, and therefore I am now lost. My husband lies down at night in fear, exactly like a woman, although he appears to be a man during the day. So Purava, stricken, struck by the sharp words of Urvasi, like an elephant struck by its driver's pointed rod, he became very angry, and not even dressing himself properly, he took a sword in his hand and went out naked into the night to follow the Gandharvas who had stolen the lambs. And after taking the two lambs, the Gandharvas shone brightly like lightning, thus illuminating the house of Purarava. Urvasi then saw her husband returning with the lambs at hand, but he was naked, and therefore she left. No longer seeing Urvasi on his bed, Purarava was most aggrieved. Because of his great attraction for her, he was very much disturbed. Thus lamenting, he began traveling about the earth like a madman. But he was not transcendental. He was not in the ecstasy of the Avanti Brahmana. Once, he went mad in separation, but not separation from Krishna. It is a reflection. Once during his travels all over the world, Purarava saw Urvasi, accompanied by five companions on the bank of the Saraswati in Kurukshetra. And then with jubilation in his face, he then spoke to her in sweet words as follows. Oh, my dear wife, oh, most cruel one, kindly stay, kindly stay. I know that I have never made you happy until now. But you should not give me up for that reason. This is not proper for you. Even if you decided to give up my company, let us never nonetheless talk for some time. Oh goddess, now that you have refused me, my beautiful body will fall down here, and because it is unsuitable for your pleasure, it will be eaten by foxes and vultures. Urvasi replied, my dear king, you are a man, a hero. Don't be impatient and give up your life. Be sober and don't allow the senses to overcome you like foxes. Don't let the foxes eat you. In other words, you should not be controlled by your senses. Rather, you should know that the heart of a woman is like that of a fox. Now, the Matajis cannot criticize the Pitajis for speaking this, because it's spoken by Urvasi. There is no use making friendship with women, she said. And then we'll talk about this point after. Women as a class are merciless and cunning. This is Urvasi speaking. They cannot tolerate even a slight offense. For their own pleasure, they can do anything irreligious, and therefore they do not fear killing even a faithful husband or brother. Women are very easily seduced by men. Therefore, polluted women give up the friendship of a man who is their well-wisher and establish false friendship amongst fools. Indeed, they seek newer and newer friends, one after another. That was her words against women, or the mentality of women, trying to free Purarava from his attachment and the pain that she has caused him by leaving him. Oh, my dear king. So we'll talk about the point right now. So what are the meaning of those criticisms, though? Is it just about women who are being criticized, or is it women and men who are attached being criticized, or is it non-devotee women being criticized, or is it non-devotees in general being criticized, or is it who's being criticized here?
Enjoyment tendency.
Yes, certainly the enjoyment tendency, but it's specifically about women. Who's being criticized? Yes, but he's specifically speaking about women. She's quite politically incorrect here. Yes, but she's talking about women.
Unchaste women.
Yeah, she's talking about actually non-devotee women. Because devotee women, of course, are chaste and don't have this kind of mentality because the devotee women are thinking always of pleasing Krishna. So and devotee men are simultaneously only thinking about pleasing Krishna. So as much as we are devotees, the criticisms don't apply. So of course we should be devotees and not fall into our conditioned nature. And it's also very interesting that when, that's even worse than yours. We should have, instead of having a sign out there, turn off your mobile phones, we should have change your ringtones.
We should have a fee.
A fee.
Or ringing.
Spoken like a true manager. Yours was the first one who rang. Spoken like a true manager. Spoken like a true geek. Yes. So we should transcend. We should become real devotees, actual devotees, of course. But anyway, obviously then said, because there is to have a female body or a male body, there are certain good things, bad things that come along with it. But the real point is that whatever situation we're in, we should become very devotionally inclined to Krishna. Very devotionally inclined to Krishna. And when we hear these things, if our false ego becomes pinched, then it might suggest that we are identifying with the body we are temporarily inhabiting. Because it doesn't have anything to do with us. This is all modes of material nature. So these are the faults born of the body, born of the modes of nature. It doesn't have anything to do with the soul. Yeah.
So to confirm your words, she says, Pumshchalya, Pumshchali is a specific type of woman.
Yes, it's flickers.
Yeah, wanton woman.
Yes.
So it's different from a sati type of woman.
Hmm. So she has a change of heart in any case after speaking in that way. She says, "Oh, my dear king, you will be able to enjoy with me as my husband at the end of every year for one night only. In this way, you will have other children one after another." And then understanding that Orvasi was pregnant, Purarava returned to his palace. And at the end of the year, there at Kurukshetra, he again obtained the association of Orvasi, who was then the mother of a heroic son. So he has gone from being happy to unhappy. So unhappy, he was a madman. Then he was happy again, but limitedly happy. Once a year he could meet with her. And then having regained, so that means all year long he's just waiting and thinking of the time when he'd be able to be with his beloved Orvasi again. And at the end of a year, King Purarava was most jubilant. That means that he was miserable the rest of the time. And he enjoyed her company and sex for one night. But then he was very sorry at the thought of separation from her. So Orvasi spoke to him as follows. "My dear king, seek shelter of the Gandharvas, for they'll be able to deliver me to you again." In accordance with these words, the king satisfied the Gandharvas by prayers, and the Gandharvas, being pleased with him, gave him an Agni Stali girl who looked exactly like Orvasi. And thinking that the girl was Orvasi, the king began walking with her in the forest. But later he could understand that she was not Orvasi, but Agni Stali. He then left Agni Stali in the forest and returned home. It's such a reflection of spiritual life, but the point is his own enjoyment, not Krishna's enjoyment. Therefore, he is the Purusha. not the enjoyed. So he was so fixed, he had attained the platform of nishta, but for orvasi, that even a duplicate orvasi was not satisfying for him, even though she was so beautiful. But no, she was a different, and he only wanted that one, that one. So he returned home, he left her, and he meditated all night long on orvasi. And in the, all night long in his feelings of separation, in the course of his meditation, the Treta millennium began, and therefore the principles of the three Vedas, including the process of performing jagya to fulfill fruitive activities, appeared within his heart. So then he performed the process of igniting a fire and sacrificial fire from some arani wood or summer wood, and the fire was considered the son of Pararava, and he was meditating on her and his relationship with him. And by the means of that fire, Pararava, who desired to go to the planet where Orvasi resided, performed the sacrifice by which he satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the enjoyer of the results of sacrifices. So he satisfied Krishna, and then, as a result, he attained, and going to the final text, he went to Gandharva Loka, and he attained Orvasi again. So he went from happy to sad to unhappy to sad and to unhappy to sad, and had six children, and then she finally, and that is where he's in Gandharva Loka. And then we go to the 26th chapter, and this is the part of the chapter that Krishna is telling Uddhava. And this is a powerful chapter to break one's attachment to the monkiness of the monkey mind. So starting in 26, I'm just going to read it quickly through, and we'll get a feeling for the whole flow of this and how powerful it is. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, having achieved his human form of life, this human form of life. Remember, this is following the chapter about the modes of nature and how they pervade, and we're supposed to focus only on Krishna and free ourselves from all the effects and qualities born of the modes of material nature. So Krishna says, having achieved this human form of life, which affords one the opportunity to realize me, and being situated in my devotional service, one can achieve me, the reservoir of all pleasure, the supreme soul of all existence, residing within the heart of every living being. A person fixed in transcendental knowledge is freed from conditioned life by giving up his false identification with the products of the material modes of nature and seeing these products as simply illusion, because what we think is reality, the attractions, the aversions, they are just illusions presented by the three modes of material nature to the mind. So giving up the false identification, which is the source of the problem, the identification with something other than Krishna's servant, being Krishna's servant, giving that up, giving up any other identity. As soon as we are in another identity, as soon as we are in a false ego, then we're immediately drawn to the modes of material nature and the illusions that they present to us. And seeing these products is simply illusion, even though one may be experiencing them, but as we heard in the final verse of the last chapter, that even that can be erased by fully realizing and experiencing Krishna's form. Seeing these products is simply illusion, he avoids entanglement with the modes of nature, although constantly among them, because the modes of nature and their products are simply not real. He does not accept them because they are not real. They cannot satisfy him, the soul. One should never associate with materialists, those dedicated to gratifying their genitals and bellies. By following them, by following materialists, one falls into the deepest pit of darkness, just like a blind man who follows another blind man. The following song was sung by the famous emperor Purarava, when deprived of his wife, Urvasi. He was at first bewildered, but by controlling his lamentation, he began to feel detachment. So if we have been presented in our life different disappointments, and dissatisfaction, they don't have to be the means of lamentation and trying to overcome to regain our material happiness that we've been lamenting about. Because if we do that, we'll be jumping around from one place on the reflected material tree of existence to another. But rather, disappointment, if one has the proper consciousness, disappointment can give birth to detachment in spiritual life, as we saw in Pingala. And here we're going to see it, and in the Avanti Brahmana. And now we will hear of the same thing in the song, the Aila Gita. So this is the consciousness that's born from Aila or Purarava, having been in the situation that we have just heard about and read about in 9:14. While she was leaving him, although he was naked, he ran after her just like a madman, and called out in great distress, "Oh, my wife, oh, terrible lady, please stop." Although for many years Purarava had enjoyed sex pleasure in the evening hours, still he was not satisfied by such insignificant enjoyment. His mind was so attracted to Urvasi that he did not notice how the nights were coming and going. And we can note that even while we were reading here in Bhagavatam class, the monkey entered. Because the monkey mind is fearless about entering any time, any place with its desires born out of its monkeyness, and that cannot bring satisfaction to the soul. But when the brave devotees recognized that the monkey had entered, they immediately called out Krishna's names, and the monkey, and picked up the stick, the danda of chastisement, and the monkey fled immediately. Which is basically the instruction that Raghunath Das Goswami has offered, to call out loudly the name of Agavit, the name of Krishna. Loudly. So, but Purarava wasn't at this stage at this point. He did not notice how the nights were coming and going when he was with Urvasi. So he says, and here's the beginning of his song, the beginning of the Aila Gita, "Oho me mohavistara kama kajmala cheta saha devya grit kantasya nayun khanda ime smitaha." Alas, just see the extent of my delusion. This goddess was embracing me and held my neck in her grip. My heart was so polluted by lust that I had no idea how my life was passing. That lady cheated me so much that I did not even see the rising or setting of the sun. That means he got up late and went to sleep early. For so many years, alas, I passed my days in vain. Alas, although I'm supposed to be a mighty emperor, the crown jewel of all kings on this earth, just see how my bewilderment has rendered me a toy animal in the hands of women. Although I was a powerful lord with great opulence, that woman gave me up as if I were no more than an insignificant blade of grass. And still, naked and without shame, I followed her, crying out to her like a madman. Where are my so-called great influence, power, and sovereignty? Just like an ass being kicked in the face by his she-ass, I ran after that woman who had already given me up. Such humiliation. What is the use of a big education or the practice of austerities and renunciation? What is the use of studying religious scriptures, of living in solitude and silence, if after all that one's mind is stolen by a woman? To hell with me. I'm such a fool that I didn't even know what was good for me, although I arrogantly thought I was highly intelligent. Although I achieved the exalted position of a lord, I allowed myself to be conquered by women as if I were a bullock or a jackass. Even after I have served the so-called nectar of the lips of Orvisi for many years, my lusty desires kept rising again and again within my heart, and they were never satisfied, just like fire that can never be extinguished by the oblations of ghee poured into its flames. Who but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who lies beyond material perception and is the Lord of self-satisfied sages, who but He can possibly save my consciousness, which has been stolen by a prostitute? Because I allowed my intelligence to become dull, and because I failed to control my senses, the great confusion of my mind did not go away. Even though Urvasi herself gave me wise counsel with well-spoken words, those words that we heard criticizing the mentality of, what is it, Punchalastriya. But how can I blame her for my trouble, when I myself am ignorant of my real spiritual nature? I did not control my senses, and so I am like a person who mistakenly sees a harmless snake rope as a snake. So he thinks the snake is a rope, and he picks it up, and he's bitten and dies because of his illusion, because of his ignorance, because of his mistake. What is this polluted body anywhere? Anyway, so filthy and full of bad odors. I was attracted by the fragrance and beauty of a woman's body. But what are those so-called attractive features? They are simply a false covering created by illusion, created by the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. It's an illusion. It is Maya. It is empowered. There's nothing inherently beautiful. It is a reflection. It is Maya. One can never decide whose property the body actually is. Does it belong to one's parents, who have given birth to it, to one's wife, who gives it pleasure, or to one's employer, who orders the body around? Who is it meant to serve? Who is it meant to give pleasure to? Is it the property of the funeral pyre, the funeral fire, or of the dogs and jackals who may ultimately devour it? Is it the property of the indwelling soul who partakes in its happiness and distress? Or does the body belong to intimate friends who encourage and help it? Although a man never definitely ascertains the proprietor of the body, he becomes most attached to it. He becomes most attached to it, and he doesn't even know who it belongs to. The material body is a polluted material form headed toward a lowly destination. Yet when a man stares at the face of a woman, he thinks, what a good-looking lady. What a charming nose she's got. And see her beautiful smile. What difference is there between ordinary worms and persons who try to enjoy this material body composed of skin, flesh, blood, muscles, fat, marrow, bone, stool, urine, and pus? like worms who are trying to enjoy the body. What's the difference? Yet even one who theoretically understands the actual nature of the body, because the attraction, because the danger, because the power of Maya is so strong, even one who theoretically understands the actual nature of the body should never associate with women or with men attached to women. After all, the contact of the senses with their objects inevitably agitates the mind. Same point as 11, 14, 29 through 30. Same point is being made. Beware of Maya. Beware of this. Beware of it. Sadhu Sabdhan. Because the mind is not disturbed by that which is neither seen nor heard, the mind of a person who restricts the material senses will automatically be checked in its material activities and become pacified. In other words, if one controls oneself, even if one has an agitated mind, gradually the agitation will cease and become pacified. Therefore, one should never let his senses associate freely with women or with men attached to women, and vice versa there. Even those who are highly learned cannot trust the six enemies of the mind. What to speak then of foolish persons like me? So after Krishna telling this to Uddhava, Krishna said what to do with the mind, because the mind jumps to these enjoying tendencies, especially if one has had these sanskaras. So Krishna says, having thus chanted this song, King Pararava, eminent amongst the demigods and human beings, gave up the position he had achieved in the planet of Urvasi. So he said this after having achieved her. This is picked up after what we had read in chapter 14 of the ninth canto. He gave up the position that he had gained by the mercy of the Gandharvas. His illusion cleansed away by transcendental knowledge, he understood me, Krishna says, to be the supreme soul within his heart. And so at last he achieved peace. An intelligent person should therefore reject all bad association. And here is the conclusion. Instead, take up the association of saintly devotees, whose words cut off the excessive attachment of one's mind. My devotees fix their minds on me, and they do not depend upon anything material. They depend on me. They're always peaceful, endowed with equal vision, and free from possessiveness, false ego, duality, and greed. O greatly fortunate Uddhav, in the association of such saintly devotees there is constant discussion of me, and those partaking in this chanting and hearing of my glories are certainly purified of all sins. Taye shunvanti gayanti hi anumodanti jagritaha matpara shadadhanascha bhaktim vindati te mai. Whoever hears chants and respectfully takes to heart these topics about me, becomes faithfully dedicated to me, and thus achieves my devotional service. What more remains to be accomplished for the perfect devotee after achieving devotional service unto me, the Supreme Absolute Truth, whose qualities are innumerable and who am the embodiment of all ecstatic experience? Just as cold, fear, and darkness are eradicated for one who approaches the sacrificial fire, so dullness, fear, and ignorance are destroyed for one engaging in serving the devotees of the Lord. The devotees of the Lord, so much glorification of satsang, of sadhu sangha, sarva shastra hoy, lava matra sadhu sangha, sarva shiddhi hoy. A satsanga tyage Vaishnava char. This is the same point that we just heard. The devotees of the Lord, peacefully fixed in absolute knowledge, are the ultimate shelter for those who are repeatedly rising and falling within the fearful ocean of material life. Such devotees are just like a strong boat that comes to rescue persons who are at the point of drowning. Just as food is the life of all creatures, just as I am the ultimate shelter for the distressed, and just as religion is the wealth of those who are passing away from this world, so my devotees are the only refuge of persons fearful of falling into a miserable condition of life. Santo dashanti chakshum shi bahiraka samutitaha devata bandava shanta shanta atma hamevacha. My devotees bestow divine eyes, whereas the sun allows only external sight, and that only when it rises in the sky. My devotees are one's real worshipable deities and real family. They are one's own self, and ultimately they are none different from me. So that, those are the words of Krishna himself. Give up the association of sensually inclined persons and associate with the devotees who are fixed in hearing about Krishna and fixed in the absolute truth, and hear from them, increase one's faith, increase one's devotional service, increase one's spiritual activities, increase one's detachment, and go home. Leave this miserable material world, the land of birth and death. So thus the chapter ends. Thus, losing his desire to be on the same planet as Orvasi, Maharaj Pururava began to wander the earth free of all material association and completely satisfied within the self. So then he was in his actual natural position, the position of a detached person, and therefore he was completely satisfied within. He had given up the false ego, which primarily means I am the enjoyer. I want to enjoy, and everything that I see is meant for my enjoyment. He had given that mentality up, very similar to Dattatreya, who Maharaj Yadu met, and who was the subject of the first three chapters, two or three chapters of the Uddhav Gita, spoken by Krishna. So he was he started out wandering, and he ended up wandering. But there's such a difference between his wandering. He was wandering in lamentation, and here he's wandering completely satisfied because he's detached from matter. So we have, our monkey mind needs to learn lessons. He needs to be kicked out. He has to go. Otherwise, we won't be able to turn to Krishna. Confirmed. That was an appropriate time sneeze, just as the monkey came at the exact appropriate time. Okay, now there's so many comments. Let me just read one or two, and then we might have a break a little early, or we might go on to the next chapter, because there's a few little presentations we have in the next chapter. So let's see. So here in text 17, he says, excuse me, first we'll go to 12 and 13. Here, where is my so-called influence in 11, power and sovereignty? Just as an ass being kicked in the face by a she-ass, I ran after that woman who had already given me up, prideless, humiliated. What is the use of a big education or the practice of austerities and renunciation? What is the use of studying religious scriptures, of living in solitude and silence, if after all that one's mind is stolen by a woman? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments, one's power of discrimination performance of austerities, receiving instructions for spiritual advancement, residing in a solitary place, and detachment from sense gratification can be destroyed in a moment by the association of a beautiful woman. 13. To hell with me, he says. I'm such a fool that I didn't even know what was good for me. Although I arrogantly thought I was highly intelligent, although I achieved the exalted position of a lord, I allowed myself to be conquered by women as if I were a bullock or a jackass. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. Being maddened by desires for sense enjoyment, foolish people, although they consider themselves to be very intelligent and learned, actually suffer while serving their animalistic propensities while enjoying the company of women. Only by the mercy of the spiritual master and saintly persons can one gradually understand that such an engagement is actually abominable. The condition of those who are intoxicated by material enjoyment so that they have become menial servants of lust is undoubtedly pathetic. Strong words by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. 15. Who but the Supreme Lord of all self-satisfied transcendentalists who exists beyond the purview of the material senses could redeem... Oh, I'm reading this translation here. PPT 1 instead. Who but the Supreme Personality of Godhead who lies beyond material perception and is the Lord of self-satisfied sages can possibly save my consciousness which has been stolen by a prostitute. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, how did this change of heart take place? How did King Ayla become detached from the desire to drink the nectar of Orvis's lips? The answer is given herein. He thought, who other than the Supreme Lord would be able to deliver me? Even self-satisfied sages cannot change the heart of a person like me, who is extremely fond of sensual pleasures. But the master of all self-realized souls, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, certainly can accomplish this. By Krishna's grace, his heart was changed. 17. We'll read the purport. Here he says, how can I blame her for my troubles when I myself am ignorant of my real spiritual nature? I did not control my senses, and so I am like a person who mistakenly sees a harmless rope as a snake. An illusion. Purport. When a person mistakes a rope for a snake, he becomes fearful and anxious. Such fear and anxiety are, of course, illusions, since the rope can never bite. Similarly, one who mistakenly thinks that the material, illusory energy of the Lord exists for his personal sense gratification will certainly bring down on his head an avalanche of material, illusory fear and anxiety. King Pararava frankly admits here that the young lady Orvasi is not to blame. After all, it was Pararava who mistakenly considered her to be an object of his personal enjoyment, and therefore he suffered the reaction by the laws of nature. Pararava himself was the offender for trying to exploit the external form of Orvasi. Of material illusory fear and anxiety, when you try to enjoy, you see something other than Krishna's energy and Krishna's mercy, mayam dvitiya, causing fear and misery. And then in 18 he says, what is this polluted body anyway? So filthy and full of bad odors, I was attracted by the fragrance and beauty of a woman's body, but what are those so-called attractive features? They are simply a false covering created by illusion. Here, Vishwanath says, King Ayla thought, the so-called beauty, sweetness, and other attractive qualities possessed by Orvasi were not the cause of my illusion. Such qualities were imagined by me because of ignorance, in other words, because of the modes of material nature. This material body, which is subject to transformation, cannot be ultimate reality. The sweet aroma, fresh youth, and other attractive qualities are simply illusions created by material nature, and yet I foolishly attributed such characteristics to Orvasi herself. Going back to the point, where does the sweetness, where does the happiness come from? Does it come from the senses? Is it in the senses? It is in the objects of the senses. But ultimately, it's in the source of both. It's in Krishna. He is the object of that brings pleasure to everyone. He is the source of happiness. So there's many more. I would like to just move to some of the glorifications of association of devotees. 29. Whoever hears and chants and respectfully takes to heart the discussions of me becomes dedicated to me and thus achieves my devotional service. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, generally, material knowledge is gained by hearing. Because the transcendental names, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna are always discussed by saintly persons, the conditioned soul gets an opportunity to hear about them. As a result of this, their propensity for sinful activities can slacken. Simply by hearing the talks of an exalted personality, one can acquire transcendental knowledge and thereby free himself from the thirst for sense gratification. One who diligently follows the instructions of the devotees becomes situated in his constitutional duty of serving Lord Hari. When a living entity is thus engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, he naturally develops attachment for glorifying the Lord and residing in the abode of the Lord. As a result, he soon manifests divine qualities such as tolerance, detachment, and freedom from envy and false ego. The polluted workings of the mind are checked. One sees things in a new light, and there blossoms the propensity for selfless, loving service to the Lord, which ultimately awards one the fruit of love of God. Okay, we'll stop here. Any questions or comments? Be patient. Abhyaga. Huh?
After he rejoined?
Yes. Because he was passing day after day after day after day, and he didn't even know whether he was coming or going. He didn't know anything. He was so much in illusion. He realized, and he wasn't satisfied. That was, you could say, that's a point of disappointment. He didn't feel the satisfaction that he was hoping to attain, the pleasure. Because material pleasure ultimately brings dissatisfaction, whether one has it or one doesn't have it. But yes, so what to do when if we're contaminated by the mode of goodness? Basically, is that what you're asking? And we're satisfied. But the nature of the world, the nature of the material energy, is that it won't leave you in satisfaction. It cannot. When the people who you love will all die, your children, you know that they're going to die, what to speak of one's own self and parents, and this will happen and that will happen and this tumult will occur, and it's just not possible, especially in Kali Yuga. And also then we can read, we can also be compassionate. Say if we're feeling satisfied and so happy in our own Krishna consciousness, we can just pick up the newspaper or listen to the news for 10 minutes and see what a terrible condition the world is in. If we're feeling so much satisfaction and lack of disappointment, we're probably the only one. Because it's a difficult material world. So we thank Krishna for him blessing us in this way and try to help others. That's called compassion. When one doesn't feel unhappiness oneself, but one's unhappiness is the suffering of others. Para upakar. Prahlad speaks about this in his prayers too. Any other questions or comments? Pingala also. With the Avanti Brahman, it was dramatic. It was, you know, he lost everything. With Pingala, it was just one day of disappointment. And for Prarabha, he came to realize his own dissatisfaction after going through so much to get to a place where he thought there would be satisfaction by having her association. And he was staying there for, we don't even know how long, but a long time, and then he finally realized this is ridiculous. Yes, go ahead with the question. But there must have been some association with devotees. For this one over here, but for this one, for Prarabha, it doesn't really talk about him being devotional. It just talks about him being detached. So, the Avanti Brahmana, Paratmanistam, Etan Sastaya, Paratmanistam, and the Pingala had association of devotees previously. But it doesn't mention that he actually became a devotee, despite that, because there is no amount of suffering that can give one devotion in and of itself. Because devotional service is from the spiritual world. It's not born of the modes of nature. Any other questions or comments? Any last one? Okay. If we can get done in 1 minute, because it's important that we end this one on time.
Yes.
This is also described by Kapila Muni. It's not that the devotional service is in ignorance, but that which is one's own consciousness mixed with the devotional service, the ignorance of one's consciousness reacts in that way. So you can look in Kapila Muni's teachings. Does anyone remember the qualities of devotional service? There's violence, there's anger. Of someone who has ignorance and is still performing devotional service.
Actually, Mother Titi, actually, she wants to kill Indra. But she got purified.
But in the third canto, Kapila Muni describes devotional service in each of the three modes of material nature.
81.
So there's. Could you look it up and see what's the description of devotional service that someone who's in the mode of ignorance will perform? Of course, he'll get purified. Devotional service isn't itself contaminated either.
Devotional service executed by a person who is envious, proud, violent, and angry, and who is a separatist, is considered to be in the mode of darkness.
Verse number?
329.8.
Okay, let's end now. And please come exactly at 12:30, because I'd like to read the section on deity worship, and then there's a few things that I'd like to present also. So we're going to be squeezed for time, perhaps, so please come on time. I think we should be okay, actually. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. The great realizations of Prarabha Aila ki jai.